Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I am, as always, Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
Yes, you are. Yep. Who have we got for our marvellous guest today, Helen Thorne?
We've got Melissa Thompson, a.k.a. Foulmouth Food.
Yay! That's you look quite sincere when you did that, Melissa. Oh, thank you very much.
She's happy to be here.
I'm happy to be in her house.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, what have we just eaten, Thorn?
We have eaten the most sumptuous, moistest chicken ever known to anybody, with beautiful rice and cucumber. But Melissa, tell us about the dish that we just hoofed in, hoovered up.
Hainanese chicken and rice. So poached chicken with rice cooked in its stock. a bit of sambal on the side.
Oh my god.
From sambal shock.
You know, it's one of those things where you have a really good, you know, time in the bedroom, and like you find you know you're going to find yourself thinking about it at 4 in the afternoon later. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be like that, isn't it?
Yeah, you just because like after I've had like really good sex, like the next day you just do occasionally you go, you know how you do that. This is what I'm going to do tomorrow after this food. I'm just going to go, yes.
Do you know what I'd enjoy even more?
What?
If you thought about it during sex. You definitely tried to do that. That made me really happy.
Quite possibly. It was the plumpest breast I've ever touched, including my own. Let me ask you this question, since you're a food person. Mm-hmm. So I like cooking. I'm really into it, and I do a lot of cooking. And one of my favourite things is to cook a really nice meal, spend quite a long time in it, sit down to eat it, and then while I'm eating it, read another cookbook about what I'm going to cook like the next day. Now, my husband says this is like watching pornography while having sex. What's your take?
Oh, I've never heard of that before.
You've never done that?
No, I haven't.
Helen, you just sound greedy.
It's the same way that I couldn't read a cookbook. Sorry, if I was sated, I don't think.
Really?
Because like you know, I like to be kind of like immediately after a meal, I can eat a cookbook. I can if I'm just fine and just averagely full, I can read a cookbook.
Yeah.
I don't know, to eat it. Isn't it a distraction?
Well, you know, it's either that or talk to my husband, isn't it, really? So, I don't do it all the time. I know what you mean. I think there's an argument that, you should be mindful, right? You should just be mindful
in the moment.
But I really enjoy eating food, and I really enjoy reading about food. So combining those two things, I mean, it's like having one in both ends, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Neither would I, to be honest.
We are obviously, Melissa, you're a food person, but can you introduce yourself? Because some people may not know you, and now they will.
You could have just said, you could have just stopped. And can you introduce, you don't have to remind her that not everyone that she's hugely famous. Like, you could have just left it at, can you introduce yourself? Because in case you don't know, Melissa, you're not quite as famous as Nigella. I don't know if you knew that. Let me inform you of that. And now please, Melissa, introduce yourself for the many people who have no fucking clue who you are or what you're on about. Thank you.
So sorry, and thank you for cooking me a nice lunch.
So, I mean, I like, Nigeria and I have got quite a lot in common. We both like eating, and that's kind of it. I write recipes and I cook a lot, and I do, like, I share a lot of it on social media, and I write. I used to be a journalist, and then, but now I kind of write about food stuff, and...
What were you writing about before? What was the...
Like, general features, so, like, a lot of interviews. basically.
Oh, God, she's actually experienced in interviewing Ellie. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We've been exposed.
You fucked it up already.
No.
Did you used to say, like, when you were interviewing, like, a celebrity, like, I don't know, Robert De Niro, would you say, "Say, Robert De Niro, obviously you're not completely famous all over the world, can you please introduce yourself?"
You're not Al Pacino, but you're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your Instagram handle?
Yeah. So how long have you been doing food as, like, a job?
So back in the day, I used to write about food when I was in a local paper, and then... I came up here, like, and I think I started a supper club in 2014, and so that was like transforming my living room into a dining room. My dining room and my living room into like a
restaurant. Yeah, it was
restaurant.
All the rage, I remember. Yeah. Back in the day. How was that? Was it? I always think, would it be weird though having strangers in your house?
Yeah, it was really weird, but it was fun, and because it was only ever like once a month, I never got used to it, and so it would be like a bit of a thrill, really, I guess, and. You know, it was all waiting for the doorbell to go for the first time, and you'd be like really nervous.
This is like come dine with me. Yeah. Ding dong.
Here comes Paul.
Except there's no one filming it, so there's no evidence if they murder you. That's why I couldn't do it. Yeah.
Or you don't see them bitching in the toilets going, "No, that wasn't cooked well."
Yeah. And then from that, Instagram
I'd always use it as a tool for like free advertising, right, to kind of show what I was doing, but I'd always shout about other people's food as well. And I was still doing my journalism job at the time. And then I left that in 2015, and then I just went straight into doing like full-on pop-ups and residencies, so taking over the kitchens of, I don't know, like a pub or a cafe, something like that.
Mm.
Yeah, and that was it, really. And then I got pregnant, so then I had to stop. And the first 3 months of being pregnant were like quite intense. So I just felt sick all the time. As I was picking food up and passing it over the pass, I'd be like trying not to vomit with the sort of smell of certain things. Like the pork belly really got me. And that's not a great PR. Like when you're sort of enjoy your food.
Smells gross.
Get away from me.
Yeah. Like when I was a games journalist and I was pregnant. Oh, I'd love to have a go on your virtual reality. It's tough.
Oh God.
So yeah, that was going to be my next question. Tell us about your family, which isn't actually a question, it is a statement.
Yeah.
Again, we're not cut out. You should just interview yourself.
Punctuation, yeah, I think so. Yeah, take over. Yes. Do a takeover at our podcast and make it better.
So my partner is Kate, and we got civilly partnered just before lockdown. And I went on a job recently, and two people in this group had their weddings cancelled because of lockdown. And what I learned is that when someone tells you that, it's not a good idea to tell them that you managed to sneak your own civil partnership in just before lockdown, because they won't talk to you and then they'll just turn around and pretend you're not there.
Oh, wow.
So
that was a learning day.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've grown as a person. Sorry,
those guys.
I'm really sorry.
So and you went for civil partnership rather than a marriage?
Yes, because I asked Kate to marry me quite a few times over the course of our relationship, and she always said no. And then I think probably just out of frustration, she was like, if they ever make civil partnership like equal and so straight people can do it, then let's do that. And now we've got a daughter, it made sense. And so then as soon as they said that straight people can get civil partnered, I was like, well, let's do it. And then I organised it, which is unlike me to organise anything. And then we did it, and it was pretty nice, yeah.
Oh, my neighbour was the first person to be civil partnered on New Year's Day.
Oh, lovely.
So Claire and Chris, who live around the corner, yeah, they were the first ones. And they're in their 50s and they've been together for over 30 years and they wanted to get it done. And yeah, so there we are.
Yeah, amazing.
Just get it done. Like Brexit. It's been 30 years. Just get it done. Tick. Done.
And then we've got a daughter who is 2.5.
And you had Ada. You were, obviously, because you were pregnant. And how was that experience for you?
It was good.
Apart from the spewing into the pork belly.
Yeah, sounds like a highlight.
It was good. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I mean, the whole system is set up quite heteronormatively. Like, you go to... I was booking an appointment with a midwife, I remember, sitting there, and she was going down, and she was clicking. Like, she wasn't that kind of, like, good with computers anyway. And, like, you know, when you want to just take over and go, like, let me do it. It'll be quicker. And after that appointment, Kate said that she's never going to come to any appointment with me ever again, because it was, like, an hour of her life that she's not going to get
back. And Kate's a doctor as well, so that must have been a bit like... Mm.
Well, no, she's just generally impatient.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, so, I mean, she can be a mechanic and be, like, as impatient. She's like, no, I haven't got time for this. Like, it's bullshit. And she was clicking through, and she was like, so the father, and we were like, obviously same-sex relationship, so there's a donor, but there isn't a father. And then she'd be like, oh yeah, but it says father, and it's like,
computer says no.
Yeah.
Computer says you're not a lesbian. How can that work for you?
Yeah. Sorry, that's not allowed.
Yeah, and it's this kind of but everyone was lovely and. And some of the reactions from people were quite funny. I was talking about to my mate about this. So her husband, well, her now ex-husband, his first reaction, which kind of says a lot about him, was when she said, oh, Melissa's expecting, or Kate and Melissa were expecting, he was like, oh my God, did Melissa have an affair?
And she just went and got some cock down the road. She went onto Tinder, as you all do.
Looking for sperm.
Pop on Amazon Prime.
I just sort of sat outside with my legs open. Just sent like them.
I tell you what, round here, probably get away with it.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's really full on. And people extra nosy. When you say, I'm pregnant and all that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah, people want to know about all the kind of mechanics. Mm. And it's difficult for me because I'm kind of probably like a bit of an oversharer, and I'll kind of go, oh, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be like, hang on, like, I don't know anything about how your child was conceived. Like, I don't want to know. Do you know what I mean? But people kind of really want to know about, like how it worked and they kind of ask all these questions, you know, and people try to be really careful around their language. But actually, sometimes I sort of be like, I just don't ask me that.
You know?
Kind of, it's just,
none of their goddamn business. Yeah, really.
It's just like, you know, she's here, she's great, and if I wanted to share that with you, then I would tell you about it. You know, like, tell me about the night, like, that
you got drunk.
Were, yeah. You know, like, what position were you in? Like, I don't need to know that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
So fuck off, is there?
I need to learn to sort of say a bit more, kind of like, fuck off.
So this is a good general advice for listeners if they've got friends who are lesbians. You don't need to ask them about all the conception details. Just go, congratulations.
Yes. Well, this is it as well. And like, I mean, it's difficult because on another hand, as same-sex couple, there's like an assumption that it was IVF, which is true in our case, and I quite like to talk about IVF because a lot of straight people, I think, like, maybe it comes with a bit more pressure, like, to talk about it, you know. And so I think I'm in a bit of a privileged position to be able to talk about IVF and not have that kind of stuff to on one hand. But I guess it's like, I want to be in charge of that conversation. I don't want to be bombarded with questions because actually, like, fucking a lot of people are having IVF, you know, and I think a lot of people will know people who are having IVF but don't know about it. And that's fine, like, people don't need to, but at the same time, it'd be nice if people did talk about it more because then there'd be less stigma. But obviously people need to be in charge of that conversation and not have questions thrusting at them.
So at the risk of thrusting a question at you, I'm now obviously trying to do this in a delicate way, but
I guess safe position.
Well, I guess based on that, my question would be, I mean, if you were talking to somebody who's thinking of going through it or is going through it now, what do you kind of know now, having gone through the process, that you wish you'd known at the beginning that maybe people don't talk about or whatever?
Good question, Ellie.
I'm actually a very sensitive and excellent journalist. I don't know if you've noticed.
I am not a journalist, and I think we've all noticed that.
I think just don't get your hopes up. And like, you could be in it for the long haul. And I think probably the best bit of advice is at the beginning, and this can change, but if you're doing it with someone else, that you're doing it with your partner, and obviously there are many ways to do it, it's like set out at the beginning how far you're prepared to go, how many rounds, and how, like, financially, how many rounds you can afford to do, because it is, like, it can be quite grueling. And it catches you out, like, in ways that you don't necessarily think it will. Like, we've had it where, you know, I've come on my period, so obviously I'm not pregnant after a cycle, and that's been a bit sad. But I've miscarried as well, and in quite, like, you know, it's like in quite sort of shit circumstances. Not that there's ever a good circumstance in which to miscarry. And actually, looking back, like, that's still not bad, but it's like, it's getting a text from someone out of the blue who, bless them, it's not their fault, who will be like, oh, I remember, like, one of my partner's friends, one of Kate's friends, texted me having found out that a cycle hadn't worked, and she'd been going through IVF as well, and she was like, I'm really sorry to hear it. And that really caught me, like, for some reason. And that was, like, almost the straw that sort of broke the camel's back. And I got quite upset about that. So just be prepared that, you know, it might not work first time. It might take several goes. And just have a very, like, a conversation, which you can, like, you know, you don't have to stick to it. But just work out how far you're prepared to go financially, emotionally, and, yeah, sort of psychologically, because it can take a massive toll.
God, that's not actual wisdom, Thorn. We've accidentally done some journalism now.
Oh, God. We're not just here for the chicken, Ellie.
Yeah, no.
Turns out we've got...
Sometimes you get more than you bargained for, don't you? Which came first, the chicken or Melissa's eggs?
Definitely the chicken. My eggs have been gone.
Was becoming a mum one of those catalysts where you're going, I need to focus on what I really want to do? Like, was it...
No, it was almost the opposite. Because food had always been... hadn't always been my thing, but that was my focus. And then when I had Ada... I ended up doing social media, sort of like management and consultancy for businesses, because that's what I was doing anyway. That's what I knew. I knew the hospitality industry. And so that was it. So it was just born out of necessity, like that period of my life. And that only stopped in lockdown, really.
Wow.
Because obviously there were all hospitality businesses shut. So they didn't really need social media.
It was all virtual or at home or delivered or whatever.
But obviously, I mean, at the beginning, it was nothing. It was that took a while to get that set up.
I know, because we got Ellie's friends with Dan, who's from a local restaurant called The Orchard.
I saw this.
Yeah. And he just sent us like a meat pack.
Oh,
like a barbecue pack. So, you know, and it was time when the restaurant was starting to get open and things like that. But it was the most glorious thing that you got all the beautiful meat and ingredients and you made this sort of restaurant quality food at home, which was delicious.
Oh, it was a good time. It was a good time. But it was even better when I went to The Orchard. And so he, I've known Dan, I went to sixth form college with him, so quite a long time. And he made me my own wanky menu. With printed out and everything, a menu, and he knows my husband's allergic to scallops, so I never get to eat them. So he made like this amazing scallop thing just for me, and I was
lovely.
Just like, "This is the best day of my life." It was a good time.
I love the Orchard. Their Sunday roast is very, very good. Isn't
it? It's wicked. Let's all go there now.
Yes,
sod this. So how was lockdown for you generally then? Because Kate's a doctor, isn't she? So was she working through the thing?
So she was quite busy and
just a bit busy, just you know.
Yeah, like I mean, it was, so she works in haematology, so so she wasn't kind of. She was what do they call it? Frontline. So she was frontline. But every day she'd hopefully get home in time to see our daughter. Wasn't always the case, but then she'd have to she couldn't even hold her anyway because she'd strip at the front door, put all her clothes in the washing machine, go and shower. And so this happened for like a long time, and so she couldn't really sort of see Ada. So it was like it was tough. And I think it was like everyone was kind of moaning about different things, weren't they? And I think, I don't know, for me it felt like there was a collective realisation that actually it's shit for a lot of people in lots of different ways, and some people have it much, much worse than than I did. Because I remember feeling a bit annoyed about people who were locked down with their partners, and I was like, but then it's like actually, if I had to be like, if we both were both working and locked down together, then that would be shit in its own way. So at least I had no work and I could just take our daughter out and it was like a routine every morning, go out, tire her out, get her down to nap, and then I got back into cooking, which I hadn't really been doing for a long time. And I loved it and had loads of projects and it was amazing. All the cliche stuff like sourdough and
banana bread
absolutely. And sauerkraut, and then it was really therapeutic.
I got obsessed with trying to recreate the Dishoom black lentils.
They're so good. You do it?
Didn't really succeed.
Have you got the Dishoom cookbook?
I think I just nicked the recipe off the internet, to be honest.
Can I just say, I got really sick during lockdown. I may or may not, I think I had corona, but Melissa came round. You came round with noodles and made me doorstep soup noodles, which was the most amazing thing. It was just what I needed, and I was really, really, really poorly. What was it that you brought? Chicken and mushrooms.
It was curry ramen, and then I think it was a black bean stew with a bit of lamb in it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But
Ellie also brought some really nice food.
Yeah, fuck off.
I bought you
your whole fucking lasagna. And I bought you a lamb biryani with some failed black dashoom rice. What the fuck are you talking about?
You're both
grateful.
What's Eddie's biryani like?
Really good.
It was so
beautiful. And the lentils were just like dashoom. They were really creamy and tasty and wow.
They just didn't have that smoky.
One day, Ellie, you'll conquer it.
I've got leftover ingredients, Miss. I'll bring them round here and you can do it properly. And then I shall take it away.
Yeah.
So that's led on quite nicely now to me doing getting into proper recipe writing and stuff, which is quite nice. So BBC Good Food magazine, I'll have some recipes in their Christmas edition.
Can you announce to the listeners that you are now a BBC food writer? You're a columnist.
I'm a columnist.
You're a columnist for the BBC.
Which is really exciting. That's exciting.
So how do you write a recipe? Do you have the idea first, then do you test it out, or do you just make it up, put down some teaspoons of that?
Having a notebook in the kitchen, because I think there's this sort of there's lots of discussions right on the back of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and representation in sort of mainstream media and our food publications in this country about how sort of food from different cultures translates into the written form, because a lot of it, and this is how I cook, when I was doing my pop-up I never wrote recipes down, because it's just you just instinctively know, so it's quite difficult to capture that and put it onto maybe that's the problem with the dashoom lentils.
She's
too white, that's what you're saying.
It's true though, that's what it is. Just trying to culturally appropriate everything and failing.
But as in the recipe that you're that's just because I think, especially when you're working with spices and stuff, they're gonna have different potencies, so it's quite hard to say a tablespoon of something when that can be very different.
They specify the brand. And that it's a Kashmiri, it's called Degi chili powder, I think. I bought it, I did it properly, Melissa.
I was trying to make you feel properly.
You failed. I wonder if it's more that, because I, as I say, love cooking, love food, but I find it quite difficult not to follow a recipe slavishly, because I'm just like, oh, well, they've tested it, they know what it is, and they know better than me, so, who am I to question Nigel Slater and the amount of honey he puts on his chicken wings, I'm trying, what I've been trying to work on in lockdown, actually, is being a bit more creative, feels like a step too far, but at least being a bit more free and being, trust myself a bit more and go, oh, this, actually taste it and go, no, actually, it doesn't need a whole teaspoon of salt or whatever, so
I always times the garlic quantity by 4. That's my rule. I always put clove, 4 cloves.
Yeah.
And
So I've never been bitten by a vampire, so it's working.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Yeah. But I definitely don't have that thing that you obviously have, which is to go, oh, that'll be nice with that, and I'll put in about that much of this, and then it turns out all right.
Yeah, but I think you probably do. Mm. Of course you would, because it's just, it's kind of like, I think if you enjoy eating and you're familiar with the ingredients that you've got in your cupboard, then you can create something nice, and it's just having the confidence to just go and do it. I think it's really hard to mess something up to the point where it's inedible.
Mm. Well, let me tell you. No, I did once make a creme brulee with granulated sugar when I was about 24.
That's a little crunchy.
Yeah, it was like eating sand in egg. It was delicious.
Oh, what? So it hadn't dissolved into the...
Stuff like that is what I'm saying to you.
Yeah, but that, when was that?
Sorry?
When was that?
When I was 23.
Yeah, and you've made it since?
No. Because it tasted like sand.
Can you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, no, when you say it like that.
Get back in that crumbling.
Yeah.
So basically, recipe writing, having a notebook in the kitchen so that you're making it, and then you start off and then you kind of build it, and as you're building it, so it's like an extra teaspoon of this, and so you're constantly writing it down, because it's that thing, when generally I think we try to remember stuff, and it's like, okay, I'll remember that, and then 5 minutes later what was that?
Yeah.
So now it's just realizing that everything has to go be written down, because you will forget it, and then it's just really nice to be able to at the end of the day sit there and type it all up and just know it's all there in front of you.
I know everyone always asks food writers this, but I still want to know anyway, what would your last meal be, Melissa?
Oh, wow.
Whether you cook it yourself or someone else cooks it, you can have as many courses as you like.
And so stomach space isn't an issue.
No, just all of it.
I could eat forever. For starter, I would have, you said scallops, like I love a scallop. And then I'd have a really good fried chicken. I'd have seafood linguine. We went to Broadstairs recently, and in Margate, I had some really good mussels. They were so plump. They were great. They like reinvigorated my love for mussels.
Reinvigorated your love life. That was oysters.
Reinvigorated my love muscles.
Oh, Margate.
Yeah.
Probably like a nice bit of brisket. Like a brisket bun from Smokestack. And ice cream for pudding. I love a bit of ice cream. Fucking love it. I like creme brulee as well. My dad makes a mean creme brulee.
What would you have, Thorn? I don't think we've ever asked each other this.
No.
You didn't ask me.
Do you know what I had? I went to the Ned the other night, and for starters, we had like a tuna tartar with like a really vinegary thing with avocado and rocket, like a salad-y thing, and that was like the most delicious thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, seafood linguine is one of my most favourite things as well. A good marinara, as we would say.
Oh, like an alla vongole.
Yes. Oh, yes, with your little clams. That's very good. A really good bit of slow-cooked lamb, I reckon. Okay. A smoky slow-cooked lamb would be very good.
Yeah.
And then for pudding, pav. Gotta have my Aussie pavlova. Nice. Lots of cream.
Chewy in the middle.
Yes. Yeah. That would be my ideal food. Ellie Gibson?
I think I might quite like a risotto to start, but I'd like to make it myself. not because I make the world's best risotto, but because I find making risotto one of the most soothing, comforting activities. I'd rather make a risotto than have a bath, honestly. I just love it. And if I was gonna die, and like, I'd find that quite comforting. I think
do a nice four cheese.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Would you forget about your imminent death?
I would find it, as I say, take the edge off. I'd be like, oh well, I'm gonna die, never mind, I'm having a nice risotto.
That's right.
So I often make risotto in times of sadness because I'm thinking like, oh, that's happening, but oh, I could put some gorgonzola in, you know, and it's all right. So I'd probably do nice. That but yeah, scallops definitely. Big rare steak with loads of fat on it, I think, for the
gorgeous.
Main Dan's garlic butter from the orchard. Mash and roast potatoes and a bit of potato gratin, like a triple potato, the trifecta.
Three ways, good.
Sour cream and chives. Oh, also a baked potato.
It is your last meal. Just go out.
Also a little side of spaghetti carbonara.
Couldn't go without that.
And then for pudding, I'm not a big pudding
person. We'll always do a cheese board if Ellie and I do a lunch.
Well, I can't say no to an eel flottante.
It's such a magical thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So what do you think of the sort of how the food scene is now, Melissa? Like, how, for example, how much do you think there's a problem with diversity in terms of sexism and racism? Do you think things are getting better or worse?
I mean, there's quite a lot of, I think there's sort of you know, a lot more women, high profile women than there used to be. A lot of lesbians, actually. I don't know whether that's just because that's my focus. I was like, there's fucking loads of lesbians.
You're being a bit homonormative, don't you say?
It's like when you get a baby and you think, oh my God, everyone's going to pram. Yes, you know, like yes. you do, that's your world. So yeah. Of course, like, but that's great because it, you know, beforehand, I don't know if I could name a high profile lesbian chef that would be in the media or that sort of thing. So that's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite good. And I think obviously kind of with everything that's happened in the last few months, like Black Lives Matter, there's a lot more discussion about sort of race in food, and I think the media is trying to change, but then there's still like a lot of work to be done. There are still kind of a lot of spaces that seem to be quite white, and lots of interesting discussions. Like, I mean, there's, you know, like always discussions about appropriation. I was talking to one of my mates actually, who she's been quite outspoken. There's like a sort of a chef and who is white and cooks a lot of food from East and Southeast Asia. And went from sort of publishing a book, went from sort of like relative obscurity to publishing a book quite quickly in a way that I don't think a person of colour like would like have that trajectory. And my friend who is Taiwanese, she got a bit pissed off because this person had a recipe published in the magazine that was a Taiwanese recipe, and that was based on a visit to Taiwan for like a couple of days. And for my friend Tiff, like that kind of bothered her because she was like, I would feel funny being Taiwanese American. I would be funny about putting a recipe to paper because like I feel like my mum and like, you know, other people would just kind of judge me. And then yet this person is kind of, you know, just gone ahead and done it. And actually, I think it says less about the individual than it says like a lot more about the system that enables people to go and publish recipes from like anywhere based on having gone to visit there for a bit. And it's not saying that people can't publish or, you know, cook the food of different cultures and different heritages, but it's just like you have to put the work in. You need to understand kind of like all the nuances and the history and be kind of respectful about it. And I think a lot of the time we see there isn't that respect.
Because there was a big furor last year or the year before about Jamie Oliver doing paella. Recipe, and like the Spanish just kind of reacted like, no, you can't put chorizo in it and you can't put this in it. And you know, fair enough. That's their dish.
Have you seen Marco Pierre White's Jamaican chicken with rice and peas?
Oh my God. Let me guess.
Fucking horrendous.
Does he marinate it in lilt?
No, he doesn't marinate it in anything. He puts chicken, and did you cook the chicken in the rice with three fucking Knorr stock cubes?
That is he's got to deal with them.
That's it for flavour. And do you know what he puts in his rice and peas? Right, so rice and peas is it's normally like gungo peas or it's kidney peas, and he puts garden peas. And he's got the cheek to say, yeah, like back in, when I go to Jamaica, this is what the locals feed me. It's like, fuck off, do they?
Yeah, even I fucking know that.
Jeez. And it's just, you know, but then that's the hypocrisy, and I think, you know, there's like a lot of learning for all of us to do, because when the whole Jamie Oliver thing happened, and I was like, oh, but you know, like, I quite like a bit of chorizo in my paella. And it's like,
I thought you were supposed to put it in.
No, you don't.
I've been miseducated by Jamie Oliver.
I thought you put chorizo in as well, but then that was I thought it was really interesting that you have social media now for that kind of response, and people could actually feed back. And so I think the power is shifting. I think the audiences want more of an authentic, you know, we use this term authenticity, but now we can find it, as you were saying, like when you've highlighted things in your BBC article and things like that, people want the real deal.
They do, but I think too often the dominant voices are feeding this, strip feeding this idea of a cuisine that isn't true, and a lot of people haven't got the inclination to go and seek out the authentic dish or the authentic version, so they just kind of get spoon fed this, like this kind of creation. I mean, maybe it'd be better if Jamie Oliver actually said, I don't know, like, just like, you know, give it like a 60 seconds of a rundown of what paella is, and that normally it doesn't have chorizo in it, but I'm going to deviate from that. But there's never any kind of, what's the word, when you reference something?
I think it's just reference.
There's sort of no credit. And this is, I see this all the time. It's like, you didn't roll out of bed, right? And as, like, you know, having grown up in Hertfordshire with like two English parents, you didn't roll out of bed and just go, oh, I'm going to make this dish out of lamb with all these spices, and I'm like, what should I call it? Oh, I might call it shawarma. Like, you didn't fucking invent that.
Yeah.
So why don't you like talk about where you got your inspiration from? But there's like loads of recipes being done with no kind of accreditation.
Mm. And no context, I guess, is the...
Yes, yeah. Massive lack of context.
So then how do you approach that then as a food writer? Do you ever hesitate to write a recipe from a certain culture, or is it more about presenting it, as I say, within context?
Do you know what? I wouldn't. Like, when I was doing my pop-up, my pop-up was Japanese comfort food, I got approached by a book agent to write a book about Japanese comfort food. And we went for a coffee, and she was quite excited, and she was very nice, and she was like, yeah, I think this would do really, really well. And then I probably should have emailed her and said, actually, this, but I didn't want to say no to it, like, outright. But at the same time, I never followed it up, because I was like, I can't write a book about Japanese comfort food. Like, I don't know enough about it. It's like, I kind of make food that tastes nice, and that I kind of, you know, I have researched, and I've been to Japan and stuff, but I can't write a book about it. Like, that's not my place. And so if that, for me, is automatic. Like, I don't understand why it's not for other people. So I write recipes that either are influenced by something, in which case I would reference them, or are based on like stuff that, you know, like that comes from sort of my heritage, whether that's Jamaican or Maltese, or I don't know, like growing up near the sea or something like that. You know, I think if it's got a story to it, then tell it. Like most recipes are ripped off from somewhere, I think, but then talk about that and what you've done to change it, because otherwise it's just plagiarism.
Yeah, because there's a big thing this week about talking about the origins of fish and chips, which is actually Portugal, and how we claim that in the UK is like, this is our national dish. But that's why London and England is an exciting place now, because I think the UK, especially now I'm a foreigner coming in the last sort of 14 years.
Yeah, well, where's your fucking contribution?
Absolutely.
Where's your fish or chips?
Absolutely nothing. But the UK had a really bad reputation for food. Mm. London had a bad reputation for food. Up until only recently, I had a bad reputation with coffee and all sorts of stuff. But now it is this extraordinary and exciting place. We've got your pop-ups in so many markets. We've got a market down the road, the broccoli market and things like that. And that people are sort of gagging for really diverse cuisines and food, and they're excited about trying new things, which before, and I'm sure there are still people that just like their egg and chips or whatever, but that has really shifted, which is a kind of exciting place to be, really.
Because I think all of that has kind of elevated all of the food scene, whereas now, you know, you have stuff like modern British cuisine, which I don't think 20 years ago you really would have had that. It's like I got bought a New York cookbook by an ex, and I was like, well, what is that? Like, what is the food of New York, and how can you put that into a book? And actually, it's just kind of picking bits from all over the world. And it hasn't really got an identity. But I think Britain has kind of got like its own food identity now, which kind of harks back, I guess, to the old like pie and mash, which is excellent.
Well, look, food chat done.
I think so, Ellie.
Yes.
Shall we go into the Scummy Mummy Confessions?
Let's go. You look eager to go, Helen.
Oh, I know. I was eager to go. Now, we've touched on being a lesbian and things like that, but my kids, now that I'm a single person, want me to be with a woman. They've decided they would like it. Yeah, the next person I'm in a relationship with, they want to be a woman. And they had a really good, open chat at Honorite Park Station the other day, very loudly, while we're waiting for the train and everyone was standing around. And my daughter says, "Mummy, are you a bisexual? And that means that you like girls and boys." I was like, "Yes, darling, I know that is." "But you should be a bisexual, Mummy." I was like, "Yes, I'd love to be a bisexual." And then she was like, "Hugo, are you bisexual?" And he's like, "I don't think I've decided yet, but maybe I'm bisexual." "You should be bisexual, Hugo. Everyone should be bisexual." And I was like, "Hey, everyone, we're a really cool family." Yeah. So that's my Scummy Mummy confession. We're right on. So maybe I should dip in, re-dip, go back to those things. Yes.
Yes. I've got a sequel confession for you.
Last week was good. So last week, do you want to recap?
So when we got back from our holiday, we had to quarantine for 2 weeks. So we got quite into putting like a telly on for the kids, putting the screens on, and then just popping upstairs for a bit of afternoon delight. And then one of them got wind of this. He came up one day and he was like, "Oh, can you help me with the thing?" And I was like, "Just having a nap." And then he was like, "I know you're having sex." So that's the story in a nutshell. Then after quarantine, we went to Wales to stay with my in-laws. And we went out for the day and we came back sort of after lunch. And I said, my father-in-law was, you know, there with the kids. And I said, I'm just going to go upstairs for a nap. And Pete went, "Oh, yeah, no, me too, yeah." And Charlie went in front of my father-in-law, "Are you going to have sex?" And I was like, "No." And then I just sort of went upstairs, and my parents were lovely, luckily, and like, but then Pete felt he had to explain to his father why our son made this connection. And I believe Jeff said, right, anyone want a cup of tea? And that was the end. It was never mentioned again. It will never be mentioned again.
No, never, so, ever.
Little sequel.
It sounds like you have a very healthy relationship, though.
Well, we're having it. Lovely nap time.
Yes. And we all need that, don't we?
Yes.
We
need to, it's very need important. To yes. Yes.
What about you, Melissa? Have you got a
sorry, we've gone quite sexual now. You don't have to talk about sex. We're not going to put any pressure on you.
But surely there's been a food disaster somewhere along the way.
Oh,
surely,
God, okay, okay. I still need to deal with this, but...
Let's do it publicly, then.
So I
Did you accidentally spit in your kimchi?
No. I know Kate's going to... She'll be like, Melissa, why did you say this? That's what she always says to me. Why,
these
why
are the best confessions. Yeah, good.
So I went to... I went somewhere locally. I won't say where it was, although I could, because they weren't unfold. And I had huevos rancheros for lunch, and the white of the egg over the yolk like wasn't set properly, and I should have just I really hate that. I should have just sent it back. Instead, I ate it, and I tried to like mix it in with the beans to try to get that residual heat to like cook that kind of raw albumin. And so I kind of ate it, but like it sat in my stomach and I could feel it. And then I got home, and then I just raced upstairs, and we were staying with friends in Herne Hill, and they've got a house that's got like quite a few stories. I raced upstairs, and we were in the top flat, and I just made it in time to sit on the toilet, get the bin, upend it, and then vomit and have diarrhea quite violently. And then later on that evening, I thought I got it all out, and I was sitting in bed. We had a mattress on the floor, and I was sitting in bed, and and I thought I would just fart a little bit.
Oh no!
So I farted, and I mean, we all know what happened, right? And so I jumped up, I ran to the door, and looked at Kate, and she was like, "Would you go to the toilet?" And I was like, "It's already too late." And
I
pointed to the bed, and she had to deal with it because I obviously had to go.
She's
back.
A doctor. Yeah. She's very no nonsense. I'm sure
you had a bloody baby, for God's sake.
But then I basically wrote quite a strongly worded email to the cafe, but it turns out it wasn't them, because we'd gone to see our friends with their daughter, and their daughter had the shits, and they'd said to us, "Oh, like it's quite contagious because one of them had the shits as well."
Oh, no.
And I was like, because I always think I'm like quite hard, and I was like, "Oh, it's fine. I've got a constitution of an ox," and I didn't. I got it from them because it was quite classic vomiting and diarrhea bug that I picked up, and I still haven't. And the cafe were really nice and kind of gave me like a list of all their processes and stuff, and they were like, "I'm really sorry this has happened, like we don't think it's come from us," and I still to this day haven't had the courage. Maybe I'll go and do it after this. I'll go and email them and just say like, "This thing that happened several months ago
when I shat the bed
if you want, I'll do it for you. I'll ring them up and tell them you're a terrible liar,
and we'll go there and have the same dish and go, "This is the most delicious dish we've ever had in our lives."
Poor
things. Yeah, my stuff were quite bad.
Oh my god, we've all done it, I think.
Well, not that specifically. I've never written to a restaurant.
No, I mean shitting the bed. Like, we've all had an accident. Ellie did it, her parents-in-law once.
Did you?
No, I wet the bed.
Oh, I
see. I had one of those dreams where you think they're in the toilet. And then I think it was only like the second time I'd stayed there. Like, we weren't married or anything. I was still a girlfriend and like... Yeah, wet the bed like the second time you meet your mother-in-law. But as I say, she's lovely. So.
And I spit
I took Helen there, and she vomited all over their spare room. So.
Why?
Oh, because I drank all the wine.
Drank all the wine. We ate all of the... we'd only known each other a few months.
Yeah.
And we ate all the cheese... But we left, like, we did that thing when you're, I don't know if you do this, but when I'm drunk, I'm like, I don't want to be greasy, so I'll eat all this cheese, leave a bit, yeah? So we woke up in the morning, there was this cheese board with like 6 bits of rind, with like teeth marks.
And then all the wine had gone in their house, including the bottle of cooking wine.
I thought it was just wine left over from dinner, and Jeff was like, "Oh no, that's what Jean uses for the cooking. It's been there for 6 months." So we'd polished that off.
And then I put it all over their ceiling, wall and carpet.
Was there red wine in there?
Yeah, only red wine. Oh. So I'm just saying this to make you feel better.
Thank you.
As I said, they're lovely people.
Yeah. Very tolerant.
What's your husband called?
Pete.
Pete, did he take the rap for the wee situation?
No, I told her, to be honest. I was just like, she's a nice woman, And, you know, she's Scottish. They're quite hardy. I think they can take it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm really sorry. I'm really embarrassed. I have something to tell you. And I sort of had these sheets, you know, I stripped
like
the
Trainspotting.
Yeah. She was like, don't worry. It happens to everyone. Like, it's fine. And yeah. She was lovely. And I think it was that point I decided to marry him.
He's a good guy.
So, yes, we have all done it. Pete's done it a lot because, as I was telling you earlier, he's got a shellfish allergy. So I always know he's better when he goes, oh, you don't know what it's like to be able to fart with confidence. Yeah, he's fine.
Oh, dear.
Well, there we go.
Oh, my God. What a delicious podcast and a wonderful person. Thank you, Melissa Thompson, a.k.a. Foul Mouths Foods, for being our guest. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for the lovely lunch.
Oh, my God. I'm going to talk about that for days.
Yeah, it's probably nearly tea time now if you want to make a sandwich. Anyway, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Foul Mouths Foods on... it's Foul with a W.
Mm-hmm.
My website's shit, so there's no point looking at that. I'll look at it.
That's the most British plug I've ever
heard. Shit, don't worry about it. I don't care. Yeah. I hate it.
Really is shit. I need to work on it. And then, obviously, in BBC Good Food Magazine. Yeah. Subscribe, and then tell them that you subscribed because I'm writing for it.
Yes. We should flog our own thing, shouldn't we, Ellie?
Go on, then.
We've got our own shop, scummymummieshop.com, and we're on tour. Go to scummymummies.com/live shows for all those details. And yes, we'll be at the Clapham Grand on the 23rd and 24th of September. And I think this podcast goes out just before that. So if you're in London, come to the show.
Yeah, we are doing shows again. We're back on the road and it's all socially distanced and all of that. Everything's being closed down, including us, before every performance.
Exactly right.
So, yeah.
And we've got some Christmas shows booked in if the world's still okay. We'll be doing those.
Yeah, it's going to be different. We don't really know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
But we're going to do our best. And if you want to come and support us, then we might make us cry a bit.
That'd be so nice. still in print. And do rate, review and subscribe. And tell your friends to listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
Nice.
All done?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Thank you. Oh, thanks again, Melissa. You've been amazing. No, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like we've covered most topics.
I think so. Vomiting, shitting, sex, IVF, and creme brulee. What more is there to life?
I don't want to know.
Until next time.
Bye. Bye.
Do you want me to go and turn the...
No, it's ambience.
What does ambience mean?
Oh, it's like atmosphere, isn't it? It's like it's adding to the natural feeling.
Okay.
We're in a domestic setting.
Which we literally are.
Yeah.
Also, we just can't be bothered to worry about that shit. That's really
fine.
The truth.
We usually have like planes going overhead, Ellie's son just shouting at us. I mean,
yeah, that was in the last one, wasn't it? Joe literally shouting out the window, you can't work, we've got to go to Wales. I used to do a podcast with another company down in Brighton, and we used to hear the seagulls, and then we moved offices, and so there was no more seagull noises, and people wrote in and complained. have you shot all the seagulls? So I can't bother to worry. Anyway, what were we talking about? So yeah, having a baby.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.